Hello, and welcome to the Enlightened Medicine Show with Dr. Valerie Olmsted. Today we're going to go over instructions for the suit, part two. Now, if you haven't heard the other shows, I started with instructions for the suit, part one, and before that, the breakdown of how the shows are put together. So if this is your first time listening, please go download those so you understand what we're after here and get a little bit more from it. So today, on the instructions for the suit, we're going to talk about something that a lot of people have a lot of misconceptions about: cleansing and detoxification. Okay, take a deep breath. Cleansing and detoxification are very, very confusing unless you get to some very, very basic and common sense avenues with this. So, let's get rid of the misconceptions. As far as your suit is concerned, your suit has a lot of self-regulatory functions. These normally take care of the little problems that come along. Now remember, the suit is your body. The problems arise when something has happened to the suit that impairs these normal functions. When we get into nutrition, we'll go over how that happens. For now, just think of it like your car. If you put diesel fuel in a gasoline engine, it doesn't work for long. We do the equivalent of that on a daily basis, in most cases, with the food, supplements, and vices that we have. For starters, let's focus on the anatomy, physiology, and biochemistry of the suit as it relates to cleansing and detoxification. And please note, this will be a very simplistic explanation and not in any way detailed or inclusive. That's because it's a huge subject. And listeners, I want to make this as simple as possible so you can really get some benefit out of this. Oh, and before I go too much further, in the background, I have a wonderful CD playing. I hope you can hear it this time. It's called Awakened Heart by Saggio and Barbara Ruth. And you can get that from SaggioHealingArts.com. That's SaggioHealingArts.com. It's a wonderful, wonderful CD. So that's going to be our background music today. All right, back to cleansing and detoxification. This is very simplistic, remember. There are several organ systems involved, and the process goes right down to the cellular level. So for simplicity, let's break it down into sections. Okay, cleansing. We'll do that part first. Cleansing is just the way it sounds. It's cleansing. When you clean your body, you know, when you take a shower, you're cleansing it. Let's go down into the internal parts, though. So the gross, in more ways than one, anatomy of the suit's cleansing system involves what used to be called the emunctory system. That's E-M-U-N-C-T-O-R-Y. And if you read any old texts, the old-time doctors, you know, from the late 1800s, early 1900s, they talk about the emunctories. That includes the urinary system, which is kidneys and bladder, the intestinal system, which is small intestine, large intestine, or colon, and rectum, the respiratory system, the lungs, and the skin, sweat glands and pores. Now think of a cleansing system as that which sends things out of the body. The simple view can be summed up as, if you're not peeing, pooping, and sweating, you've got a problem. It is vital for these systems to be functioning properly, or you suffer conditions related to a backup in your plumbing system. Now, every organ system has a cleansing system within it for obvious reasons. Well, okay, maybe not obvious yet, but we'll get there. So let's break it down further into systems. So we have the urinary system. That starts with the kidneys. Anything related to kidneys is called renal. The job of the kidneys is to monitor what is in the blood at any moment and grab those things which are not necessary and send them out of the body. In other words, to excrete metabolic waste. Hey, now you know, big scientific word. That's only a part of what they do, but like I said, let's keep things simple. Every suit is supposed to have two of these cleansing mechanisms, but some only have one, or have one which is deformed or too small or withered or just not working. The interesting thing about kidneys is that we can go through life just fine with only one kidney, hence the success of kidney transplants. The kidneys are, well, kidney-shaped. They lie on the posterior back wall of the suit, mostly under the ribs, with the right kidney slightly lower than the left. Now this occurs due to the liver taking up more space on that side. Movement of the lungs downward causes the kidneys to move downward also. As far as the strange things that can happen in renal anatomy, kidneys can be unilateral, which is both on one side, horseshoe-shaped, where they grow together as one unit, multiple, pelvic, rosette, and can have aberrant or abnormal arteries which cause obstruction. The spinal nerves from T7 to L1 are the ones related to kidney functions. And if you're not familiar with that terminology, T7 means thoracic 7, and L1 is lumbar 1. So that's from about the mid to the bottom of your back. Those relate to kidney functions. Inside the kidneys are masses of tubules and glomeruli. The job of the tubules is to hold some things back and release some things. The glomeruli are like filter baskets. Pressure gradients control the flow. As the blood is filtered through the kidneys, these tubules monitor and work to keep what the body needs and throw out the rest on a moment-to-moment basis. The large common collecting area in the kidneys is called the renal calyx. This is a common area for the spectacular kidney stones, or renal calculi, we get here in the Southwest that are called staghorn stones. The staghorn calculi form from too much of the alkali minerals in the water we drink. I have to tell you a funny story about that from my ER days. A man came in doubled over, moaning in pain, and was diagnosed as having kidney stones. As is customary in such a case, he was given morphine intravenously to relax the ureters, as well as a large amount of intravenous fluids to help flush out the stone. Also customary is the use of a urinal to catch all urine for further testing. When the urine is dumped, it's poured through a special strainer to catch any evidence of stones. So as I stood on the other side of the curtain, after giving the patient instructions to use the urinal, I heard clunk. I asked what he threw into the urinal. He was surprised, told me he hadn't thrown anything in. Dutifully straining the urine, I was surprised to find the most beautiful, big, shiny, sky blue chunk of sharp staghorn I'd ever seen. Well, actually, it was the first I'd ever seen. It was crescent-shaped and about 1 inch by 1.5 inches. Very impressive. Taking it to the physician, I remarked that the patient said he hadn't thrown anything in there, but look here what I found. The physician nodded and said, yep, those are the kind of stones we grow out here. He wasn't lying. That came out of him. All I could say was, wow, and then, yow. To say I was impressed would be putting it mildly. There are various, many types of stones that can be formed, and they can be various sizes, from pepper or sand grain size on up to staghorns. I can tell you that most of the people who suffer from stone formation are in a whole lot of pain when trying to pass them. Why do they form? Well, that's another whole show. We're not going to cover that here. From the kidneys, ureters, or tubes that carry the urine, go down into the bladder. That's the collecting bag where urine is stored until needing to be emptied. There's a little muscle area, which is part of the bladder wall, called the urinary sphincter that opens, usually on command, to release the urine down through the urethra, which you can kind of think of as the exit tube. That also has a sphincter, by the way. If you have a bladder infection, that sphincter becomes very irritated and has terrible muscle spasms, which can be very, very painful. Now let's talk about the job the kidneys do. Their major function is water regulation, with minerals, electrolytes, and acid-base balance included. The point is to maintain normal concentrations in body fluids. The kidneys also excrete waste, which have been mentioned as those substances no longer needed or which serve no purpose. This encompasses breakdown products from food or body processes, and that would be urea from proteins, uric acid from nucleic acids, creatinine from muscles, and hemoglobin breakdown products. That comes from your blood. Also considered waste is any foreign chemical or its metabolites. A metabolite is a substance produced by metabolism, like drugs, food additives, pesticides, chemicals, etc. That's not all the kidneys do. They also produce some hormones and create glucose from amino acids, which is known as gluconeogenesis. Ooh, another one of them big words. When needed. The kidneys are pretty complex organisms, and we do need them to keep the suit clean. Untreated kidney failure can result in renal coma and delirium, with death following 3 days later. Not all suits have a conscious awareness alert activation system. Translation? Would you like a translation of that? Some people just do not notice when they're having a problem. Here's a hint. If you're taking in 2 or 3 quarts of liquids daily, and you're urinating out about a cup daily, you are in trouble. Time to get the hints to a proper medical facility. Note to suit owners, the intake of liquids should approximately match the output of urine. This may not occur if massive sweating is going on at the same time. That's because massive sweating draws fluid out through the skin in an attempt to cool the suit. At such times, urine will appear dark and be of a smaller quantity. Sodium and potassium levels are critical to maintaining proper functioning of the kidney system. A good blood pressure is also required in order for the rate of filtration, remember those glomeruli and tubules, to be the most efficient. If you have a systolic blood pressure lower than 70 millimeters of mercury, and that's how we measure blood pressure, you may have problems getting the filtration through your kidneys. Oh, by the way, when you lie down, filtration is increased due to less gravitational pull. That's right. That's why you have to get up in the middle of the night and go empty the bladder. Here's some facts. The amount of blood filtered through the average person, and we're talking about 150 pounds, is somewhere around 180 liters per day. 180 liters per day. And the entire plasma volume of the body is filtered by the kidneys around 60 times per day. Are you saying wow? I say wow every time I think about that. You might have heard of people drinking their first morning urine. I told you it was going to be gross. As a means to healing themselves. That's based on the body's tendencies to monitor and filter. So you're talking about kind of a feedback system approach to instructing the suit and what needs to be done. The general consensus is that we need at least 2 quarts or liters of water daily just to function, and more in hot climates or when doing intense physical work. Here's a note of caution. Too much water is as bad or worse than too little. There are many cases of water intoxication listed on the medical books. It's a case of diluting the blood too much, resulting in death. As in all things, balance is the key to good health. Now, let's go on to the intestinal system. The intestinal system handles solid waste. Apparently that's upsetting my cat if you hear a yowl in the background. I have a Siamese cat and he likes to put in his 2 cents worth. It starts out as having stomach contents, moving the contents on through several sections, taking out nutrients and liquids along the way. We'll get into that more in the digestion and assimilation section of the suit instructions. That will be part 4. Right now, we're going to examine what the intestinal system has to do with waste management, or cleansing the internal suit. You know, your suit has internal and external parts. We're talking about the internal parts right now. Okay, what parts are we speaking of? That would be the small intestine, large intestine, and rectum. The nerves concerning the intestinal system run from mid-thoracic spine on down through the sacrum. That's a lot of nerves. Mid-thoracic spine is the middle of your back, listeners. Goes all the way down to your butt. Like I said, that's a lot of nerves. So what does this branch of the suit do? The small intestine's job is that of removing 80% of the water we swallow. It does this by a diffusion process. Let's see, how do we describe that? It's kind of like a market description, supply and demand. The small intestine also absorbs most of our nutrients. From the small intestine, the contents, which are known as chyme, C-H-Y-M-E, move through the ileocecal valve, and anyone who has had a problem with one of those knows what it is, and into the large intestine, also known as the colon. The colon absorbs the rest of whatever water is needed, then the solid waste collects in the rectum, which needs to be emptied at least daily. Yes, that's right, daily. And actually, it should be more than that if you are eating 3-plus meals a day. The biggest movement, however, usually occurs at pretty much the same time every day and is called the mass movement. This is caused by peristaltic action, which is muscles squeezing sequentially all down the line. For those people who have fed and watered their suit appropriately, the rectum will usually have to be emptied several times daily. In naturopathic medicine circles, we say you eat, you poop. It never ceases to amaze me when doctors don't understand this and think it's okay if someone has a bowel movement only once a week. Ay, ay, ay. I've seen plenty of patients who haven't had one in a month. Believe me, that is not a pretty sight. I've also seen poop of such a huge size you could only say that the person birthed it. In fact, one was so impressive the ER staff weighed it. It weighed 12 pounds. It was unbelievable. That normally only happens on those who are on narcotics or have spinal injuries. And we try to prevent that kind of stuff. It's really not healthy. Okay, let's get down to why it is so important to have a bowel movement daily, especially for men. Yes, men. Are you listening, men? The rectum is a holding chamber. That does not mean it should hold waste for a long time. Think about anatomy a bit here. The prostate can be felt through the wall of the rectum. Men, remember the finger wave, otherwise known as the digital exam? When you eat meat, especially non-organic, and it has not only putrefied, which is due to improper digestion, but also has pesticides, hormones, and antibiotics in it, and then you don't have bowel movements as often as you eat, the waste products sit there, right against your prostate gland. The tissues of your body do have the capability to transport things through them. So what do you think the likelihood is of transporting chemicals through to the prostate in this scenario? These chemicals include the organic metabolites of what you have eaten. Now, as an aside, in Japan, I've heard it's common for men to clean inside the rectum after defecating for prostate health. They also do prostate massage at least once a week. And this is something that I teach in my clinic. When I'm doing an exam and I have a couple in, I'll teach the woman how to do the prostate exam and, you know, it can enrich your sex life too. So you never know what you're going to learn on this program. Now, do you think that they might understand something in Japan about the body that we seem to have missed? Now, let's talk about the outside of the intestinal cleansing system, the anus. It is important to clean the anus well after having a bowel movement for several reasons. One is that, well, it's just hygienic and quote-unquote proper and tends to keep one's clothes cleaner. Now, if you're cracking up now, okay, hey, I warned you it was going to be gross. Another is that the stomach acids in the waste will actually continue to work, thereby digesting the skin and causing infection to take hold. And for women, there's always the danger that bacteria that are good in the colon but bad in the vagina will travel frontwards and cause a bladder or vaginal infection. If the bacteria travel far enough, the result can be pelvic inflammatory disease, which can render a woman sterile, to say nothing about the bacterial infection itself. If it travels up into the kidneys, then you've got a massive kidney infection. This may be a good time to offer a little advice to those who are unaware of this. Never go from anus to vagina in sex. Yes, I am talking about sex. No matter what your sexual preferences are, this is something that is very important to understand. The vagina is a place that is perfect for bacterial growth. It's dark, warm, and moist. And I mention this because I've been appalled recently by several young couples relating that this type of sex is their favorite, and they routinely perform this type of maneuver. I get all kinds of people in the clinic. And they come in with health problems. So I have to delve into this stuff and find out what's really going on, what caused the problem. Now, the reason that I'm appalled is that this is, or so I thought, a basic rule of hygiene. So how can it be that anyone does not understand this? Yikes! Seems to me this should be classified as self-destructive behavior. All right, enough about that. Now let's get on to the sweat glands. Did you know it's a good thing to sweat? If you can't sweat, you have a hard time cooling the suit. If the suit overheats and the brain pan becomes a frying pan, the CPU unit will malfunction. Translation: too high of a fever for too long will kill you. Most of the deaths I've seen from a temperature malfunction have been around 106 degrees Fahrenheit. What's scary is that in most of these cases, there was an unknown cause. Nowadays, it's considered one of those strange things that can happen with certain people under anesthesia. But most of the ones I saw came in off the street like that and died the next day or sooner. Are you getting how important it is to have your sweat glands working? I know it's not pretty. I know it's terrible to have these big sweat stains and to kind of have that odor. But it's really important that you are able to sweat. Anyway, that's not the main thing we're discussing at this point as far as the deaths from fever. We're really after the cleansing role of the sweat glands. Now, the sweat glands are considered to be the most deeply penetrating of all the skin appendages. So if you've suffered a full thickness burn, you have had your sweat glands destroyed in that area. Sweat glands are controlled by the sympathetic nerves. No, that doesn't mean they weep with sympathy for you. It means if you get nervous, you sweat. Sweat glands are a major regulator of body heat. When you sweat, heat and vapor go outside the body and are carried away by convection currents, wind, thereby cooling the body. It is a huge energy drain to convert water from liquid to gas. So the heat taken from the surface thereby cools the body. For those of you born with a genetic deficiency of sweat glands, all is not lost. Heat and water are still conducted through the skin by diffusion. But the act of sweating is active and requires secretion into the sweat glands and extrusion to the skin surface. You know, better out than in. The main mineral excreted is salt. If you've ever been around someone with a kidney problem that caused salt excretion, you've seen a salt film form on their skin, which attracts animals, by the way. The predisposition to excrete large amounts of salt has to do with aldosterone, which is a hormone related to kidney function. And for those who are taking notes, that's the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system. And yeah, I paid a lot of money to say them big words. And I think about my mom, you know, when we talk about this type of stuff. My mother has that deficiency and refuses to do anything about it. And she's just fine. She's 86 years old. However, in the summertime, she sweats salt. And animals love her. If she plunks her butt down outside someplace, they will come and they will sit all over her and lick her. And, you know, I've seen that happen so many times, it's really kind of funny. However, it can get quite serious. If it's upset enough, if there's enough of a problem with that particular system, then you have all kinds of other problems, too. Now, when we do a cleansing of the skin system, we're really talking about using the sweat glands to rid the body of the bad chemicals. For instance, a standard naturopathic treatment is to put someone in what we call a hot box. That's an enclosed space of about 120 to 140 degrees Fahrenheit. It's pretty amazing what happens with that. Before I go into that, though, let me give you a few precautions. If you're going to do this, be sure you know what you're doing first. And I'm going to be saying that quite a few times because I mean it. If you go into a hot box and someone doesn't know you're there and you don't have adequate water, you could bake yourself. So, you know, use some common sense. Take some precautions. Bring lots of water in with you. Bring a cordless or a cellular telephone. Set a timer. Tell somebody that you're going to do this, particularly if you are toxic and you're doing this to sweat solvents out. So let's get out to pretty amazing. It is pretty amazing what happens with that. For instance, those who have absorbed large amounts of solvents will have those solvents come out during the sweat. Any cotton clothing worn during the treatment will reek of solvents. Did you know that many of the toxic chemicals we absorb are stored in fat? Then when you decrease the amount of fat in the body, these chemicals are released into the bloodstream, thereby making you sick. That's why when you do this kind of a thing and you start to get sick, you wonder and you stop doing it, but you really need to be supported. You need to be prepared to do a detox. We'll cover that later. The most important thing to remember is drink plenty of water, hopefully with lemon juice, when sweating a lot. If you're really sweating excessively, you need to replace salt. So hence the salt tablets and things like that. My favorite way to replace it, however, is to use an electrolyte drink. And I'm not really happy with the ones that use a lot of sugar. I'd really rather see that you use something that's without the sugar, or at least a decreased amount of sugar, so that you're getting the electrolytes that you need without really punching your pancreas. That's another thing we'll talk about another time. Okay, let's go on to the respiratory system. Lungs, that's what we're talking about. Did you know your lungs have an important cleansing function? How about we go over some of the components of the respiratory system? First, we have your nose, although that is actually considered part of the upper respiratory tract. And a URI is what we call a cold or sinusitis, upper respiratory infection. Then we go into the trachea, which is known as the windpipe, the bronchi, and the lungs, ending with alveolar sacs, look kind of like little fleshy grape clusters. The first meaning of the respiratory system would be the cilia, tiny hairs that beat towards the throat, thereby sending any particulates into the throat to be either hacked up or swallowed. This is to get rid of not only mucus, but also any bacteria or particulate matter, like dust particles or burn particulates. Helping the cilia is the fluid secreted by the epithelium, which is the lining, which requires chloride to work, hence the problem with those having the disease cystic fibrosis. The last step is the macrophage. That's a cell designed to engulf anything considered abnormal and keep it from entering blood or cells. Both cilia and macrophages are damaged and incapacitated by smoke and air pollution. Think this might be a problem? You also have something called goblet cells in the trachea, specifically to digest those things you accidentally swallow the wrong way. Now, I wouldn't want you to depend on that. The trachea is not the right place to send your food. Okay, now we have to go talk about the Heimlich maneuver. The lungs retain at least a quart of unused air, which allows us to squeeze the lungs and pop out most things that get jammed in the trachea. To illustrate, put a champagne cork over the end of a turkey baster, then suddenly squeeze the bulb. The cork pops off. This is how the Heimlich maneuver works. And it does work, I can tell you. Every time I've had to perform that maneuver, it has worked wonderfully. Impressively, actually. Stuff flies across the room. If there are any kids or stupid people listening, all I can say is don't try this at home. Unless someone really is choking, that is. In other words, don't make yourself choke just to see if it works. Please. Use the turkey baster. On the other hand, if someone is dumb enough to try this on a live person without a good reason, well, all I can say is natural selection works. That means the gene pool will be minus someone who probably shouldn't have been reproducing anyway. And in case you're wondering, I am not in favor of saving stupid people from their terminal mistakes. It sounds harsh, but Mother Nature has a way of preserving the intelligent and eliminating the not-so-intelligent. It's known as natural selection. So what does all this mean? It means if you're a smoker, or living with a smoker, or if your job ensures that you are inhaling toxic smoke or substances, then you have probably incapacitated the cleansing mechanisms of the respiratory system. If you are a smoker with children, for your children's sake, smoke outside. I can't tell you how many cases of childhood asthma have been cured by the smokers stopping such behavior in their children's environment. And that means don't do it when you're driving in the car with them, too, please. You have no idea what's happening to the rest of the body due to that stuff, either. Right now, we're just talking about the cleansing aspect, but there's a lot more to it when you smoke. All right, now let's go on to detoxification. All right, you better take another deep breath for this one. This is pretty complex also. Detox. Everyone talks about it, but what does it mean? Most people consider any cleansing routine to be detox. But detox really applies just to using the detoxification pathways of the liver. The liver is so important that we can't live without one. Wonder if that's why they call it the liver. Just a thought. What do I mean by detox pathways of the liver? Good question. It means the enzyme systems contained in the liver that have to do with processing all the stuff that ends up in the bloodstream into harmless substances to either be absorbed or excreted. The important thing to know is, due to genetic changes, pretty much everyone has some form of enzymatic dysfunction. There are more and more enzyme systems being discovered daily. I asked my environmental medicine teacher what this all means. He said, and I quote, "It means we have no idea what to do about all this." Wow. I knew it was serious. We struggle so hard to help people, but how can we do a conscientious detox when we have no idea what direction their pathways will go? This is one of those times we just close our eyes, tap our shoes together, and wish for the best. Now, there are some tests you can get to determine the major or most common enzyme defects, and they are way less expensive than 10 years ago. It used to be you'd be charged about $150,000 for a DNA test, and now it's down to anywhere from hundreds to thousands, which is way better. And you can ask your doctor to contact Genova Labs, that's G-E-N-O-V-A, and they have a 16-test kit which covers the most common problems with heart, liver, immune, and bones. Ask your doctor if you're concerned about this. Most of the time, we just do our tried and true method of detox, and as long as it works, we are happy. So, what is a detox all about? Boy, that's a loaded question. Well, I'm going to give it an attempt, guys. Here we go. Generally, we are planning to clean out a particular system and help it to function better. You've probably heard about colon cleansing, gallbladder cleanses, liver detox, and maybe even stomach cleansing. Let's examine the more common detox cleanses. First is the colon cleanse. This is probably the more popular one. It's normally aimed at removing old mucus layers and opening up the drainage pores for the lymph system, which, by the way, are contained in the walls of the intestine. Usually, one will undertake this type of cleanse as a fasting cleanse, but there are several variations. The most mild is to take the cleanse stuff while still eating fairly normally. The middle of the road is to eliminate 1 to 2 meals and take the cleanse stuff. The intense one is to fast while taking various herbal supplements. Which type you take can have a huge impact on your health, not to mention that if you don't know what you're doing, it can kill you. Seriously. The two parts of a colon cleanse require two types of material. The first is the psyllium or hemp fiber or flax that we use, and we make a shake. It's usually combined with some type of binder like bentonite clay. Now, before you get all excited, I've heard many people are concerned with using clay due to the aluminum found in it. To my knowledge, aluminum is too big a molecule to be absorbed by the body. All I can say is do your research, and if it bothers you, don't use it. In other words, take responsibility for your own decisions. Now, normally the fiber is mixed with water or half fruit juice and swallowed about 1 and 1/2 hours before the meal is taken. At that time, cleansing detox herbs are taken, and then 1 and 1/2 hours later, the fiber shake is repeated. Hour and a half later, the herbs are repeated, etc. During this time, minerals and vitamins are combined with the herbs, never with the fiber drink. Let's think about what we're doing here. Use a little common sense. If you're using psyllium or hemp or flax fibers with clay or some other binding agent like charcoal, the purpose is to bind with whatever is in the colon and take it out of the body. When you use herbs specific for detox and cleansing, they are formulated to either go to the liver and assist the pathways there, or to soften and dissolve the hardened mucus layers stuck on the intestinal walls. Maybe both. Minerals and vitamins taken at that time are to assist the body in what it needs to do. So let's think about this for a minute. If part A, fibers and binding agents, are combined with part B, vitamins, minerals, herbs, they will bind all of those substances and take them out of the body. It's common sense. And yet there are still products out there that combine both parts together. I suggest you look for a product that treats these separately, but that's just me. I hate wasting money needlessly. Why would I want to put something in that's going to be bound up and taken out and have very little, if no, effect? Okay, I'm coming down from the soapbox. Now let's get on to another one. There's been a lot of sword waving over the whole cleansing detox thing by the conventional medical people. They claim they look at colons all the time and never see any of the stuff that is claimed to be stuck to the colon. To those critics, I say, try the stuff yourself, honestly, for a week, at least 3 times. Then tell me it isn't there. I have personally experienced at least 275 feet of strange stuff coming off my small and large intestines. The first 3 cleanses just looked like my poop was hanging together extremely well. My physical state, however, improved dramatically with each cleanse. I went from skin breakouts, extreme fatigue, vague but troubling ailments, and poor healing, to lots of energy, great skin, no aches or pains, and almost instantaneous healing. When I cleansed the intestines, I had so many strange things happen and such amazing stuff come out of me that I had to admit that something was going on. Let me mention here, though, that it would have been far better if I had known at the time that my system should have been supported first. Heck, I'm surprised I lived through that first cleansing fast. It was pretty intense. I've supervised a few people who refused to look at what came out. They claim they just wanted to feel better and didn't care what was exiting. That always cracks me up. How are you going to know the state of your intestines if you never look? Okay, so maybe I'm just weird. But as an RN, I was considered a certified poop inspector. So as a physician, I must at least have a doctorate in poop inspection. The truth is, you can tell the size of various parts of the intestine, as well as get a clue to your absorption capabilities when you look at what comes out. Another thing that happens is that those of upper-class lifestyles tend to think they have nothing wrong. After all, their physician would have told them if they did, right? Boy, you can cue the hysterical laughter here. If you had any idea how many people have worms and other parasites, you would truly be horrified. After all, how can we have such things in modern society? Ha! I say. Personally, I saw 4 different kinds of parasites come out of me that I had no idea were living inside me. Yuck! Okay, the problem with having this, having a thick, hardened mucus layer stuck on your intestines, is this. Your nutrients can't get through. You are literally starving to death. How the heck do you expect to have any energy when nothing can get through? Here's a good example. After my first colon cleanse, I went shopping and got the normal amount of food. As it turns out, 4/5 of that rotted in my refrigerator. I couldn't eat it. I was finally getting some nourishment through my intestines. Being curious, I tried to cut through some of that later that came out. I couldn't. The best way I can describe it is it's like a really thick sausage casing. No wonder we age and die. And yes, you can reverse aging by cleansing the intestines and doing a proper detox program. I've done it, so have lots of others. By the way, the first 3 colon cleanses I did, the mucus layers had a terrible chemical stench. No doubt from all the antibiotics and such I had taken over the years. The stench was bad enough that it would make your eyes water, and I am not kidding. And no, it didn't smell like poop. It smelled like really bad, strong chemicals. It was pretty frightening. The upshot of a good intestinal cleanse is that you get lots of energy and heal quicker. Not bad, eh? The hard part is in knowing what sort of cleansing or detoxification you need first. When in doubt, I say support the liver. This is because whenever you do a cleanse or detox, substances get released into the bloodstream, some from the colon itself, some from fat stores. At any rate, your liver has to process them again, so it needs proper support. There are 2 major detoxification pathways in the liver. We call them phase 1 and phase 2. The reason it's important to understand what they are and do is because if one or the other is off, you are in trouble. Here's the simple explanation of what is supposed to happen. Toxic substance comes into the liver and is metabolized, or changed, by phase one into an even more toxic substance. Sounds strange, but bear with me. This more toxic substance is made because the chemistry has to be changed in order to change the substance into a water-soluble form. Phase one's job is to get it ready for the next change. Phase two then takes that more toxic substance and changes the biochemistry into a harmless water-soluble substance that can be safely excreted. Pretty good plan. The problem comes in when, for instance, phase one is top-notch and phase two is barely operational. In that case, there's a pileup of very toxic substances that have nowhere to go and no way to get out of the body. That's a pretty oops. The troubles that can be caused from that depend on the substance. It can be anything from liver damage to hypertension to senile dementia or Alzheimer's to metabolic acidosis or alkalosis to kidney disease to cancer, you name it. It's a bad problem. There's another problem to consider. Most drugs, herbs, and food substances have either inhibitory or reducing effect or an inducing or increasing effect on the detox pathways of the liver. Yeah, I know. You say. I agree. Now, there are some that we do know about, and I'm sure many we do not. The next question is, which of your own liver enzymes are not functioning correctly? How does all of this affect those enzymes? Who knows? We're trying to find out. Are you confused? Do you wonder what to do? See previous pages where I mentioned the standard operating procedure. Try something and see if it works for you. Now, if you have any kind of illness, disease, or intuition that something isn't quite right within your system, please consult your physician. By the way, this is your standard disclaimer inserted here, so you will be reminded that this is not to be construed as medical advice. Go consult your doctor for any problems, blah, blah, blah. You know this, right? This is an educational program. This is not your particular medical advice. Please take that to heart. I bet you are just itching to know how the heck you can find if your pathways are working. Well, I'm glad you asked that. Genova Labs has a test for detoxification pathways. And no, I do not have stock in Genova Labs. They just happen to have these really cool things. When in doubt, check it out. There are several companies that put together nutraceuticals specifically to help phase one and phase two detoxification. A lot of alternative practitioners are familiar with these products. Another thing to consider, why are you interested in doing a detox? By the way, medicine docs will tell you that the word detox is being used incorrectly here. I'm claiming artistic license and common use reasons for using it, okay? If you are really sick and desperately looking for help, please be sure you consult the appropriate professional medical help. If you're just curious, that's okay. First determine what system needs the most cleansing or detox, then go from there. If you have any disease process, first be sure you know what you're getting into before doing any of this. Are you aware that there have been deaths associated with detox and even fasting while patients have been in the hospital? This happens due to electrolyte imbalance, dehydration, blood sugar imbalance, or toxin overload, as well as unknown causes. Remember those enzyme systems? There have even been cases of patients killed by giving enemas. No, I am not talking about Marilyn Monroe. That was a different case. In fact, a well-known, well-respected medical journal once printed an article about how two separate patients had died from being given enemas by naturopathic doctors, when in fact they were not naturopathic doctors, they were MDs who were not trained in naturopathic medicine. The journal refused to print a retraction even when presented with the evidence. You see, when you put too much water in, it leaches out minerals, which need to be replaced, or you could have a case of electrolyte imbalance, which can kill you quickly if not corrected. And you're probably wondering what the heck electrolytes are. Well, those are the minerals that we check to see if they're in proper balance. That would be sodium, potassium, chloride, and we check CO2 also and a few other things. But those are the major things that we deal with because they have so much to do with so many body processes. In fact, your heart works by a sodium-potassium pump. So things have to be in balance, and we have a very narrow range in which we live. And if you go too far outside of the low or the high, it kills you because our enzymes will stop functioning. And the enzymes that we have are not just in the liver. They're in different other systems, too. But they work in a very narrow range. So if those enzymes stop, life stops. And before I go farther on that, I should clarify that there are different classes of enzymes. There's the metabolic enzymes to keep your body going, and there's digestive enzymes. Most of the time we hear about digestive enzymes. You know, like, oh, I got to take my digestive enzymes with my meal. That's different than the metabolic. Okay. And there's a few other classes, too. Also, to the toxic stuff here, if your toxic substance overloads your liver, heart, or brain, you're out of here. So you can see, I hope, that there are cautions to doing any of this stuff. Just use some common sense. Be sure you understand what you're doing. I can tell you from personal experience that when those toxins start moving, it feels awful. It's kind of like being blind drunk and having a massive life-threatening hangover at the same time, especially if you're really toxic. Of course, the remedy for that is give yourself an enema, get the stuff out of the body quick. These are the two common ways we detox, but there are other means of cleansing and detoxification we can use. Just be careful with whatever you decide to do, so you may avoid damaging the internal mechanisms of the suit. Take a deep breath now. Sit back, relax. That was pretty complicated, I know. I tried to make it simple. I hope that that helped. My major caveat or caution in this is please do take proper care. If you're going to do cleansing and detox, you must know why, what you're hoping to accomplish, and you must understand the process that you're going to use. And let me insert in here a little aside about gallbladder cleanses. That's one of the most popular ones, and everyone wants to run out and clean out the gallbladder. The major precaution with that is if you have large gallstones, it can actually kill you because the body will, when you do the end of the cleanse where you take the olive oil, it will cause such a huge discharge of bile from your gallbladder that the stone will try to get out. If it's a big stone, it will be unable to get out and it will block things or rupture. Either one is kind of catastrophic because then if you block the bile from coming down from the liver, then it backs up into the liver and starts causing problems there. If the stone tries to move into the lumen or the hole, you know, going out of the gallbladder and come down the duct, then you can cause rupture there, you can cause complete blockage there. So the best thing that you can do if you're going to do a gallbladder cleanse is go get an ultrasound of your gallbladder. Make sure that you don't have stones there. There's other tests that we do too. There's tests during a physical exam that are supposed to tell you if there's a gall problem. But I can tell you that I have had patients that despite doing the physical exam for that to see if there was a problem, showed nothing. And, you know, kept having strange things. You send them to the gastroenterologist. They get an ultrasound, and then they come back and say, well, I've got, you know, 3 or 10 or whatever gallstones the size of a quarter. It's like, wow, how could you not have the physical response that shows that you have that going on in your gallbladder? But some people don't. You know, nerves are funny things. You know, we think they all work properly, but sometimes they don't. So it's always better to err on the side of caution. So for those of you who are considering doing something like that, as I said, use common sense, please. Start to realize that your body is a delicate mechanism, and even though it's pretty tough and survives a lot of things, sometimes it can't survive what we do to it. So let's be a little more careful with our suit. I don't know about you, but I kind of like my suit to work when I need it. Did that help? Do you now have some information that can help you to better live within your own suit? I certainly hope so. And if you have any other questions, please feel free to email me at info@drvalerienmd.com. That's info at drvalerie.com. And I will endeavor to answer your questions. As I mentioned in the first show, I will not be giving you personal medical advice unless you are authorizing me to act as your physician. And I do have consults available. I do phone consults or email consults, as well as in the office. So if you would like that, give me your contact information, and I will get back to you as soon as I can. And also, if you have any suggestions or major concerns about any of the subjects I'm talking about, please just shoot me an email, and I'll see about including that in a future show. We'll see if we can take an hour to just explain some things in a little bit more depth. And hopefully that will help you to take better care of your suit. Now, next week, we will be talking about Instructions for the Suit, Part 3. That's going to be on nutrition. Nutrition is a huge subject, people. So I am now trying to figure out how I'm going to break down this subject of nutrition so that it makes some sense. And just know going into it that nutrition varies from suit to suit. And what works for me may not work for you, and vice versa. So if you have a prejudice about how people eat, what they should eat or shouldn't eat, you need to throw that by the wayside before you listen to the show, because I'm going to tell you the truth about it. And that's what this show is all about. It's the truth. And it's the plain truth. So we're looking to enlighten people as to the workings of their physical body, as well as mind and spirit. I hope that you have enjoyed this program today. And maybe I should talk a little bit about what we're going to be doing as far as all this suit business. If you're just tuning in and you haven't heard that there was a part one to the suit, go back to the archives and click on that. And I started with instructions and capabilities, functions of the suit. This has been part two, which is concerning cleansing and detoxification of the suit. Part three next week will be nutrition of the suit. And part four, which would be the last in the series, is on digestion and assimilation. So that part is all about what happens when you put something in your mouth that you consider to be food. And where does it go? What does it go through? What are the processes, and what can you do to help those processes? So that's going to be pretty involved also. And I can tell you right now that no matter what you put in your mouth, if you're not digesting it and assimilating it into the body substance of your suit, then you're not doing any good. You will just have expensive waste, or interesting waste, depending on which way you look at it. So we're going to be talking about these different things in order to help you understand a little bit better, so you don't fall into the pitfalls that most of the Americans have gotten into. And by that I'm talking about fast food. And we are going to be talking with Alex Jameson, by the way, on a future program. And she is the nutritionist and organic chef girlfriend of Morgan Spurlock, whose movie Supersize Me showed exactly what happens when you eat nothing but fast food for a month. So that will be a pretty interesting thing. In the meantime, if you haven't seen that movie, I highly recommend it. It's called Supersize Me by Morgan Spurlock, and it's all about how he ate nothing but McDonald's for an entire month and the terrible stuff that happened to his body. So we're going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about how important it is to make sure that things are coming in and out, that things are nourishing, that things are clean. This next one, when I'm talking about nutrition, I'm going to talk about liquids we put in our body, which includes water. So we're going to be talking quite a bit about water. It's one of the most important things, because we are 70% or more water. Some of us at certain times of the month are approaching 80%. So, women, you know what I'm talking about. So we'll talk about all these things and get you a better understanding of how the suit works. so that you can be happy and healthy and you can enjoy things in life. And then we're going to be talking also, I'll be talking with Dr. Emoto. His show will be on the 29th, and that's Messages from Water. And if you'd like to preview what his stuff is about, go to hado.net. That's hado.net. And they have a beautiful website, and it's all about his research on what happens when you put certain words on water. So we're going to talk about that, too. Water is so important in our bodies. So we have quite a few things lined up that are really interesting and basically showing you quantum physics of how the suit works. Everything in the suit is based on quantum physics. And perhaps I'll get Dr. Vernon Wolf on one day also to talk about how the suit is made up of microtubules, which is all the quantum physics area, and how we connect to each other and the universe through these microtubules, through the holons, through the hyperspace that is making up all of our bodies. This stuff gets really fascinating. So I'm really looking forward to getting into more of the quantum physics of the body, and I hope that you find this as interesting as I do. I think the body is fascinating. We have one of the most incredible mechanisms for running around in this third dimension, and it can be great fun, especially if you can pull yourself out of the oh no, it's bad stuff. So it's going to be great fun, I think, and I hope you enjoy it. And I thank you for listening, and I hope that you'll tune again next week. And also invite your friends to tune in or to get onto the website and download the previous archived shows. And again, thanks again for listening. And I enjoy being able to bring this truth to you. May your lives be blessed. Talk to you next week. This has been the Enlightened Medicine Show with Dr. Valerie Olmsted.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.